E bem-vindos a um programa que vou chamar o Here's the Thing Special. Muito bem-vindos. Cá estamos para termos uma conversa com uma pessoa muito, muito interessante da nossa comunidade. Vamos fazer uma apresentação e uma entrevista à Maria João Maciel George, MJ, como ela gosta que lhe chamem. E a Maria João escreveu um livro novo que vamos conversar e vamos conversar com respeito a isso. E por isso vamos fazer a entrevista em inglês, porque o livro inicialmente vai ser escrito em inglês, talvez mais tarde vai ser feito em português, mas para já vamos falar em inglês, já que o livro está feito dessa forma. Maria João, bem-vinda. Welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome to Camões TV. It's always a pleasure to have you in our studios, and you know, you've collaborated with Millennial before and other media for Camões, and we are very appreciative of your engagement with us. You are the Associate Dean. You got a long title, Associate Dean, Global and Community Engagement, Faculty of Liberal Arts and Professional Studies at York University. Now, you know, York University is not, just any school. It's a school with a long history. And I think being Associate Dean is a very, very advanced position. And, we should all be very proud of MJ for taking you on this role.
Thank you. Congratulations.
And today we are discussing your new book.
My new book.
Your new book, The Hyphen and Other Thoughts from In Between. I'm still thinking about the title and, I'm sure you're going to get some questions about that, but the book will be released April 23rd from Archipelago Press, with the publisher being Fernanda Viveiros.
Correct.
So, welcome. I'm going to ask you a few questions, obviously. That's why we're here. It's a conversation, not questions. I mean, I don't like to things to feel like a question. But my first question is just enlighten me a little bit and maybe our audience on the title of the book, starting with the hyphen, and then you can go on the second part.
Okay, so the hyphen, for me, it's the space of possibilities. It tends to be a space where most immigrants occupy. You're neither here nor there. You're in both places. And you can be a Portuguese immigrant. You can be from a family of immigrants. We all know what it feels like to sort of be in the middle. That's what the hyphen is, the little thing that connects two worlds in this case, just like it works in language.
But it doesn't mean that we're invisible.
Not at all. It actually, for me, it can be a place of celebration. It can be, we're sort of chameleons. We almost belong. And we can access worlds that we wouldn't otherwise if we weren't immigrants.
Right. So that people understand the hyphen, you're neither here nor there. You're in the middle. And you can adjust to adjust yourself based on your background or being an immigrant or not, and you can go this way or that way and accept either culture and adjust to it.
And it's also a place of performance. You can perform to be part of one culture or another, and it's also a place of choice. You can choose elements of both cultures and not necessarily all of each culture.
You, this is not your first book.
No.
You've written several books before. What inspired you to write this book, and why at this time?
Hmm. Well, in 2016, I wrote a book of short stories, Andarilha, Viagens de um Hífen.
Yes.
And that was published in Portugal, in the Azores, specifically by Letras Levadas. And for a long time, I've been thinking of some of the themes of that book. So some of the themes in this book, although most of the narratives are brand new, all the narratives are new, but some of the themes have been inspired by some that were already present in 2016. Role of women, issues of exclusion, marginalization that many immigrants feel, old age, things that, you know, issues that I have been concerned about, and I continue to worry about these things as I myself get older as well.
Well, I haven't read the book because it's not available just yet, so I can't really provide an opinion or a critique of what it says. But I've read some of your thoughts about what this book is about, and overall, I think it's, let me say that I think could be a little bit controversial in some aspects. And I think if a book is not controversial, then it's not doing its job. So, I'm looking forward to reading it all. But, I'm going to start by suggesting that, your thought process on hyphenated Canadians and where we stand and where we belong in this country, from the perspective of the Azorean diaspora, and one of the questions that came to my mind is why only the Azorean diaspora, and what differentiates the Azorean side from the mainland side? And I'm not even going to say Madeira, because I think Madeira is probably a little bit more like the Azorean rather than the mainland. Culturally wise, but what differentiates an hyphenated Azorean from an hyphenated
mainlander? Well, for me, so first of all, the book is a tribute to the Azores, where I'm from, and some of the pieces will be controversial, some of the pieces will be funny, some of the pieces I hope people will feel empathy. Most of all, I hope people see themselves in them, regardless if they are Azorean Canadian, mainland, or Portuguese Canadian, or whatever hyphenated state they might feel themselves. I think one of the, and in fact, the book starts with a piece that is a response to Vitorino Nemesio's Açorianidade. And it's my version of Açorianidade from the 10th island. Toronto is the 10th island, and it is the largest 10th island, despite our American immigrants claiming that it resides somewhere in the United States. It does not. It's Toronto. I think one of the main differences, there are many shared commonalities, of course. Azorians, like mainlanders, were victims of the dictatorship. And I grew up at a time where that was still very much felt. And it was felt more in the Azores because modernity arrived later there.
Yep.
So I grew up with that patriarchy mentality that what we inherited from the dictatorship was, it lasted longer in the Azores than it did in the mainland. The other issue has been for Azorians, the issue of language and the ignorance that is still around about who Azorians are and how they should or should not speak. Like, I've been told that I wasn't a real Azorian because I don't have an accent. And I have an accent from the island where I was raised, was the island of Faial. This is how my Portuguese is from that island. But here, because many of the mass immigrants that came in the 50s and 60s, they had never encountered someone from the Azores. In fact, some of the research shows that a lot of mainlanders thought that Azorians were a backwards people. And when they heard someone from, let's say, Habdupesh speak, they just assumed that everybody spoke that way. Of course, there's these issues of, you know, if you are from a fisherman's village, no matter where you are in the mainland or the Azores, people are going to speak differently. But it doesn't make them less.
They're going to speak differently, and people are going to look at them differently intellectually, because generally they didn't evolve as well as the people who live out of other industries such as agriculture or so on, because the education was very much different. But I'm going to challenge a little thing that you just said about I'm going to start by asking you.
And I wanted to say that the other major difference too is that there's hope in continuous land.
Yeah.
Azorians didn't have that hope.
Right.
So the level of desperation, and I grew up around women who were beaten, men who were alcoholic. That's what ignorance and desperation makes a society. It was a broken society. And also because we were centuries in isolation, there were a lot of things from the Portuguese that in the mainland, the language evolved in ways that didn't evolve in the islands. So sometimes those little pieces have been used as connotations of inferiority or superiority. And that's something I try to write against.
Well, I fully agree with you, having been born, under the fascist regime and in the middle of people with very little education and certain customs and traditions, very poor. But language, if you go to the interior of Portugal, again, the language is different. People have different customs, traditions, and accents. But when it comes to the Azores, first of all, why do you love being Azorean? And secondly, you mentioned the 10th island in Toronto. Well, I want to remind you that the 10th island in Toronto can be very much challenged. And I'll tell you why. I suggest that even in the Azorean islands themselves, the other nine, several of them don't even like each other. They don't even get along. And so I think the uniformity of the Azores themselves as islands can be very much be challenged by the way they look at each other.
Right.
Now, creating a 10th island, let's say in Toronto, as you suggest, how do you propose to get the other nine islands in Toronto to become a 10th island and get along with each other?
You know what? I don't propose that. First of all, I think I love being Azorean just as much as I love being Portuguese, just as much as I love being Canadian. Just as much as I sometimes are mislabeled, when I speak Spanish, somebody will say, "Hey, are you Mexican?" I'm like, "No, I'm not, but I like that." So I think part of what I try to do in the book too is present a 10th island that can be modern, that can be critical, that can be hybrid, and it can learn from all the different influences, a sort of a model perhaps to the issues of division that I often see when I go home. But I'm also aware that I'm an educated person. So if somebody who's not educated says, "Oh, people in San Miguel, although they all speak very poorly, they get the most resources of all the islands." So I try to use my educated self not to criticize people who aren't, but to say, well, there are more people there. They do need more resources. And how boring would it be if we all spoke the same?
Of course.
And sometimes I do that with my own family members, right? So when people say MJ is an Azorean of two islands, I'm perfectly okay with that. And I think more people that see themselves from the Azores instead of a specific island, I think that's probably a solution to get out of this sort of, in Portuguese, we call it bairrismos, right?
Well, that was going to be my comment, that even here, you'll have nine islands, yeah, who are bairristas, and we're trying to create a 10th island that for the last 70 years, it's been under construction.
Right.
I still think that there's some ways to go to create, you know, the 10th island and possibly even the mainland. It doesn't happen because I don't feel that we found our place in Canada yet, after 70 years. What's missing?
Well, I think we need to... Well, several things. I think we need to let go of old traditions that don't make sense to younger people. It is up to them to define what the future is, right? I don't necessarily believe that the future is through language only. The future can be through a lot of cultural identifications. I think it was hard on our people to come here with very little resources and very little education to actually teach the new generations icons of Portuguese culture, because they themselves didn't know that either, right?
That's right.
So, you know, I've been in places where, you know, they have matanças de porco, pigs killing. And I say, can you call that something else? Because I don't eat pork and I don't believe. And you know what? In mainland and in the Azores, nobody does that anymore. Like, people don't go to celebrate these things, right? What I heard back was, I said, why don't you call this a regional night? Something like that. We already have that, so we can't use that term. Okay, no young person who was born and raised in Canada is going to think it's cool to go to a pig's killing. So there's certain things about culture that we need to rethink. We need to repackage, right? But I also think the 10th island is all those things. It's people that fit and people that don't fit. In any island, there's weird,
there should be room
mythological creatures, yep, that, you know, in the Azores, for instance, I remember labregos who used to, they used to just pull chains in and out of the ocean. Maybe some of the characters in our 10th island are like, you know, this mythological creatures.
And you know, this mythology should never be lost, because it's what keeps many traditions alive, both in the Azores and in the mainland. And they practice it purposely, yeah, on a yearly basis, be it on a festival or through food. They keep practicing it because they don't want to lose that identity, because that's what separates one island from the next, a village from the next, because they each have their own specific,
yeah,
tradition, and it's very important. But, you know, I agree with you that there's no need for us here to kill a pig and call it, a killing of a pig. You go, if you want the meat or you want the whatever, you go to a butcher shop, it's all laid out for you and clean. So, but it's still, they're trying to hang on to that tradition.
It's a pass.
And, you know, it's like us liking certain types of food from our regions,
yeah,
that nobody, you know, you tell somebody that you like that particular food and says, oh my God, you eat that? Yes, and I love it. But that's what it is. It's a survival thing.
Yeah. And you know what? We're not much different than any other culture, right?
No.
We come, we bring that culture that we knew then. So what we need to do is we need to let the younger generations know the Portugal of today,
yes,
which is completely different.
And, you know, these 7 years have created a population of Portuguese Canadians that are very much different than, you know, the first ones that came,
for sure,
came here. I, you know, we'll never be like the Americans, because they're in a different sphere. from the point of view that they've been in the United States for so much longer. The traditions are there. They're much more integrated into every system of society in the United States. In Canada, we've resisted that. And this is why I don't think that we've advanced as quickly as we should have. Now, you know, through a lot of sacrifice, MJ has achieved a certain position of privilege, and today, you know, you're able to sit here, an educated woman who writes books, who lectures, who understands how society works through working with a lot of people in your job. How do you feel today, as I said, as a woman of some privilege and knowledge, that that rose above, as I said, through hard work? Are you a little bit more judgmental of what hasn't been done and where people still are in society as hyphenated Portuguese Canadians? How do you look at our communities overall, not necessarily just the Azorean diaspora?
As an educated person, I think I'm less judgmental.
Okay.
And I actually have a lot of love for our community, because I think that we haven't celebrated enough. And I know you've been involved in, you know, you're always in the Portugal month and its celebrations and the 70th anniversary of the pioneers. If we actually think of where we came from, what we've done is incredible. Men and women that came from nothing, that built empires.
Agree.
We need to celebrate that, because they came with so little tools. They came without, many didn't know how to read and write. Many didn't know how to speak English. Many still might not. They built lives for their families. They have integrated grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I think those are stories of celebration. And for me, I've never forgotten where I've come from. So part of my...
What does that do for you, not forgetting?
Not forgetting, and the book is, first of all, a tribute to those that in my youth I dismissed. Because although I was raised in a somewhat broken society, I was also raised around very resilient people. And I've met those people here who have been silent all their lives, who have labored, who have given their bodies to the extreme temperatures.
So why don't they have a voice?
Well, I try to give them a voice in my book, because that's how I don't forget. That's how I'm trying to make good of my privilege, is to, and that's why the book is in English, because it is a book about us, but for everybody. It is a book designed for an English reader that knows nothing about our immigration story. I want people to learn about us. I want people to learn about nameless people who have had incredible lives that no one has paid attention. Stories of success, also stories of struggle.
Yes, and we know that our immigration, starting 7 years ago, was an immigration for sacrifice. We knew that we were coming here and that we were going to be treated a little bit like slaves. We're going to be taken advantage of. We're going to be taken, given jobs that you know, nobody else wants, which today we still see it a little bit. But one of the things that you know, is a pet peeve of mine sometimes is you know, our parents and grandparents that came here, they weren't very much interested in school. They were interested in work, making money, and creating for their family a home and so on, which is very honorable considering the conditions that they came from. And in my mind, that's why a lot of Portuguese never embraced university, never embraced college, and so on, other than maybe in the past few years. You, on the other hand, seem to have embraced college and university right from the very beginning. Was that an encouragement from your family or from your from yourself?
Oh, it all came from me. I came by myself when I was 18.
Yep.
My family, I don't have any family here.
Right.
I only have a son.
Yes.
And I came just like all the other women that came before me and after me. And I worked hard. I was a cleaning lady, more specifically a Molly maid.
Mm-hmm.
I was not very good at that job.
Hey, Molly maid is not too bad.
I know, but I couldn't keep the job because my boss hired me because I was Portuguese. So my book, I tried to fight a little bit too against the stereotypes and demystify some concepts about us. And I remember he came to say, I thought you were Portuguese. I'm like, I am. Because you're not really very good at cleaning. So that's a job that I
That was always a very poor comment from certain ethnicities towards the Portuguese. And I never appreciated that.
Yeah, and I remember when I went to my job interview at York University in 2005, somebody said, oh, so-and-so that cleans our floor is Portuguese. And I said, so what? Do you expect me now to clean the floor? Because that's not going to happen. I always wanted to go to university. I was always a strange little kid. I was a little kid that lived in the books. I wanted to take more books home than I was allowed from the mobile library that we had going around the island. So when I see libraries empty and books closed, that really bothers me because we're supposed to open them and let the words take control of us, right? I don't think, so first of all, I was from a poor family. And I think culturally, even if we weren't a poor family, there was no plans for me to go to university. So I knew at 14 and 15 that I needed to get out. I needed to leave the island. And then I came and I had to figure out how to make money like everyone else. And it wasn't until later when I went to university. And I paid for my first year of university from a job that I had in a place called FAPCO in Dresden, Ontario, that no longer exists. And I was able to make a lot of money because I convinced my lead hand to teach me how to weld.
Wonderful.
And I welded for an entire year. I was one of two women that did that. I was maybe, this was early 20s. And I worked Saturday, Sundays, and I paid for my first year of university from that job. I will never forget.
So it's the sacrifices that we make in life that makes us successful. It's a combination of many things and many talents that we acquire over the years. And then, you know, and we become people that aren't afraid of ever having to go back and starting over if necessary. And I think those are the qualities of people that embrace life no matter what it is. We have a minute and a half, and I want to really tell the people that we're going to have the book presentation on the 25th?
26th.
See, thank you for paying attention. And so yeah, everybody's invited to the Peach Gallery to see the book presentation with Maria, João Maciel Jorge, and the book is called Hyphen, and I'm not going to say the rest of the name because I think just the hyphen, I think it's such an interesting title, and I want to congratulate you for, you know, once in a while you write a book. You tell a story, you believe in the, you know, that culture can be expanded and celebrated by telling people about the truth about who we are and as people and where we came from. Because sometimes we tend to forget, we get so involved in the stupidity of life sometimes that we forget. And I think books like this fill that void. I hope one day you can write a book about called the iPhone for the mainland. So there you go.
Well, mainlanders are represented in this book too. It's a book about all of us, I would say. I think I pay tribute to the Azores because I was young and foolish, and there was some unfinished business to honor people, to honor the common people around me that I had not.
Well, MJ, thank you so much for being here, and never stop being foolish.
Very good. It's a deal. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.